Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, October the 18th, 2018. 10:18:18, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. And today is one of those days where you just, if you're listening on a radio, tear the knob off, pull the button off. If you're in the car, stop whatever you're doing, pull over to the side of the road to listen to this program. If you're on a listening device, make sure you have great reception and do not turn the dial, because we have one of my favorite guests on of all time. Every time he graces us with his presence on this program, I am always honored, as is the audience. He has hosted so many talk shows and interviewed so many brilliant people. Lucille Ball, Alfred Hitchcock, Marlon Brando, Groucho Marx, and that's just a few. He is witty, he is urbane, he is genius, one of the best talk show hosts, if not the best of all time, Dick Cavett. Mr. Cavett, how are you? And I think we lost him. Well, hopefully we did not lose him during that, will I have to do that intro again? Oh my goodness, I hope not. Okay, I tell you what, we're going to hold the line here, and we're going to try to get Mr. Cavett right after this short but important break here on WWGH Radio. Don't you dare go away. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think Zilla are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
And we are back, and I think we have reestablished connection with the legendary Dick Cavett. Dick, I hope you heard the introduction. It was a whopper.
I thought it would be funny to just stay silent here for a few minutes. You don't have to call me again. No, wait a minute, that's not in the Christmas spirit, is it?
No, we're not. Oh, I should mention for the listening audience that at the end of the program today, Mr. Cavett, at the end of the program today, you're going to read "'Twas the Night Before Christmas."
Ah, so.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can remember it.
How are things? What are you up to these days?
Okay. By the way, you're not old enough to know that every Christmas when I was a kid, the actor Lionel Barrymore did The Night Before Christmas all over the country. Everyone tuned in to hear Lionel Barrymore go, "It was the night before Christmas and all through the house." That's not a very flattering imitation of him, but it's sort of like it. But I wonder whoever replaced him. No idea.
I don't know if anybody does it anymore.
There are a lot of interesting things about that poem. It's still not entirely certain which of a couple of people wrote it.
Well, that's interesting.
In one version, the word crests of snow is breasts of snow.
Oh, I
did. In the newer version, apparently they were afraid that it might give children an idea about women's bodies or something. A censorship crew got in there. But it's probably the most famous poem in the world.
You know it is, and as we get...
And it was in Dutch. So the Donder and Blitzen were something like Doener and Bluxum. And that had to be changed for the English-speaking audience.
It's a fascinating...
Isn't it interesting to have a subject that has nothing to do with Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah, well, I think from time to time we have to get away from the president because it'll wear you out. So, we're going to do that at the end of the program today. We'll do that.
Okay.
So, but there's...
Can you goose the volume at your end? I'm sorry to use such colorful language.
Yes, here we are. How's that? Is that better?
Tis better.
All right. And away we go. How are things in your world, Dick? What's new with you?
Oh, let's see. What is new with me? I found my old stamp album from childhood. I wonder if any of my stamps have increased in value. And an old house that I moved into in Connecticut, I just learned, contained the person of Harry Houdini. Houdini's brother owned this house, and he used to come here, and lucky kids would sneak in and peek at his... practicing his underwater escapes in the swimming pool.
Now, how did you learn this?
That would have made my life worthwhile.
How did you learn of this information?
Well, there's local things about various old houses here, and I ran across a slight booklet about it, and I just, when I read that, my heart leapt up, and I decided that if I could just see one instant of the ghost of Harry Houdini, I would be happy. That wasn't his real name, you know.
What was his real name?
Eric Weitz.
Oh.
Long ways from Houdini.
Now, yeah. If I have...
He was kind of a nasty man, according to some of my old magician friends who knew him. Well, those who knew him are probably gone all by now, but the great Di Vernon, sort of the dean of magicians up until he died a few years ago, he said, "I was in Harry's dressing room once, and the guy brought in his shirt, the valet, and it wasn't folded right, and Harry smacked him across the face with the back of his hand." And Vernon said, "Harry, you can't do that to people." And Harry said, "But I am Houdini." Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because do you think ego just comes with celebrity? Has anybody escaped that when you get that type of fame that you don't implode?
We're in the midst of a very large fade in volume. Is that me or you?
I hope it's not me.
Oh.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It slides down and then it comes back up.
Do you think that with fame, must come an ego.
Must what?
Must ego come with fame? Are there people who have been able to stay humble even after fame has come to them?
Well, this is really disgusting because I lost the last three words. I'm wondering if a different phone would be a good idea. It's hard to, how do you decide if the problem's at one end or the other?
Well, usually when we do interviews, things have went well. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Have you had trouble
that
with this? That faded too.
The last thing I heard was usually when we do interviews, that's how it sounded.
It could be the phone.
I think it may be. Can I give you another number to try?
Yeah, let me go to a break here, and I will get the phone, and I will give you the number.
That's exciting for the listeners.
Well, this is real live radio here. We'll be right back.
This is life itself.
We will be right back at break with Dick Cannon. New number. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
We're having fun every day from 1 to 3 p.m. on Now with Scott Spears right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Just ask legendary comedian Phyllis Diller.
Why hasn't the world found Scott and put him on a pedestal? And, after all, Larry King can't live forever.
Or legendary actress Jane Meadows.
That's one of the reasons I tell you you're the best of all the interviewers. And that's why I love you and your show, dear.
Actress and singer Marla Gibbs.
As long as you breathe, you'd better believe it's never too late for life. So drop all your fear, 'cause as long as you're here, it's never too late for life.
Our professional wrestler and movie star Ox Baker.
I want to tell you, listen to WWGH, this is Ox Baker. Mary, hi, I know you listen to WWG. You better start listening.
Or the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Hello there. How are you, Scott Spears? Ted Williams here in Columbus, Ohio. And Scott, I just want to let you know I love you as an individual. I always refer to Marion as being the home of WCMH's Bob Nunnally, and now I refer to it as the home of Scott Spears.
That's Now with Scott Spears, 1 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, right here on WWGH 107.1 FM, the place to be.
All right, let's try this again. Can you hear me better now, Mr. Cavett?
Not as well as when you went away a moment ago, but I can, yeah.
All right, so hopefully we don't taper off this time.
Okay, if I start screaming.
Tell me about the early days with Jack Parr.
Oh, that's an interesting subject. Jack Parr, I guess, is the strangest, incomparable, can't compare him with or even to anybody else. Strange combination of great showmanship, great ad-lib ability, wonderful wit, high intelligence, extreme neurosis, a touch of paranoia, and a few other things in the mix, which made him on the screen, on the little screen, as they used to call television, an individual that you could not draw your eyes away from. The great British critic Kenneth Tynan from the London Observer came over and saw Parr for the first time. And he said the fascinating thing about him is that he's so compelling on the screen that if he's talking with someone else who is also on the screen, you can't take your eyes off of Parr for fear you will miss a live nervous breakdown on your home screen. True. He was never as good in prime time as he was in late night because he tried to dress everything up in what he thought was big-time television, but it stifled what Jack intrinsically was. And the lucky people saw Jack Parr on The Tonight Show. When there was great old days when a guy named Jonathan Winters would come on, and many, many people who were famous for a time and utterly forgotten now. Certainly not Johnny Winters.
What do you think Jack Parr's neuroses was?
I'm not sure. He seemed to have certain fears, a certain insecurity that made him, whatever that means, which very glib analysis here, but I don't know. When you were with him, you were always a little afraid you were just going to say bang and your job would be over. And yet, he seemed to like one. I know he liked me a lot in many ways, but we had a couple of disputes which I just about got myself out of a job. Can't even remember what they were about now, but I remember thinking, pull back, old boy, you're going to be back at Time Magazine as a copy boy if you aren't careful.
Was he somebody who you could go out and have dinner with and have a good time with?
I don't know, because I never had dinner with Jack. He came to my house in the country once and with his wife and daughter, and in conversation, he was compelling, always. I don't know what haunted Jack. I know that, I think in my first book, the book Cabot, I wrote about it by saying that it was like somewhat like, I guess it must be, to have an alcoholic parent, where each day the other members of the family say, how is he today, or what's he like now, or is this going to be a good day or a horrible day? And you could tell when you stepped into the office and looked at the producer's face that this was a good or a bad, nerve-wracking day where Jack was troubled. Real interesting for a psychology student.
A fascinating man. Now, a lot of people do listen, or watch the Cabot shows on the Decades channel now, and I always wonder, how did you come up with that format for the Cabot show, which was different than really the other late night talk shows?
Well, I don't know how different it was. One thing was to put to bed the apparently standard rule that you had to have a desk and a couch, which I did for a long time. And then a theater director, a friend of mine, said, you know, you're kind of covered up by the desk and it's sort of awkward. It looks like someone's applying for a job with you. Why don't we just take the damn desk out and make a kind of circle of people talking, and both worked okay, but I guess it was the power of the first Tonight Show that prescribed that everybody who hosted one had to sit at a damn desk. It was probably good for the furniture industry, but I don't know. How do you see it as different?
That sometimes you would have one guest on, and that would be it. And they were serious interviews.
Oh, yeah, that never seemed like such a crazy idea to me. Because if you're lucky enough to have someone there who's interesting, entertaining, and smart, why stop? It's like people get packaged into 8 or 12 minutes, or maybe rarely 13. And then you stop for a musical number, and then you stop that for the somebody from the musical number who uses the word exciting in it every 30 seconds. And it's much easier to do 90 minutes with somebody good than to do 20. You don't wear them out.
When you had Alfred Hitchcock on, which I have just seen recently, what was it like to sit across from him?
Well, it felt like you were in his certain shots of him in films. It really was cute, horrible word, on the night I had him on, where somebody suggested we open with the two profiles in dark, the two dark profiles against a white background, his and mine facing each other with the familiar rum-pum-pum-pum Hitchcock music. The interesting thing, oddly enough, you can do a show and forget that night anything you did in it and not be able to tell people. Carson and I got into talk about that one night when he was frightened because he went home while he was still hosting his night show, and his doorman said, "Well, how was the show tonight, Mr. Carson?" Apparently Irish. And Johnny said, "Well," and I said to him, "We had the usual four guests. We had he said, "Richard, I couldn't think of any of them." Now, it was an hour earlier, and I liked him so much, and I thought, "Well, I know something that'll make him maybe feel better," because he was sort of saying, "Has this ever happened to you?" And I said, "I came home one night from a 90-minuter, and somebody said, 'How'd it go?'" And I said, "Fine." And they said, "Who was it?" And I said, "Oh, my God. Wait a minute. They sat right there. Could not picture anything that happened or who it was in those 90 minutes. Finally, I did, but, you know, 20 minutes or more had gone by. And, like, when you blank on a word and then it reappears. And, but you'll admit that it's a fairly obscure guest that I forgot, Lucille Ball. Don't ever tell her.
I've seen that show. She had a lot of feathers on.
Yes, that's right. That show, yeah.
I would have
gone more than once, but that was the one. And Johnny and I felt that it had to be. We were discussing this in a dark bar phone booth. Booth. You can fix what I say so that it sounds like a normal person talking. We were sitting in a booth in a dark restaurant in California. And we were talking about this. He was a little worried because he was one of the most tense people I've ever met and always wanted to relieve him of it, if only momentarily. But we decided that you sort of have to flush away the show you've just done because you have to do another one way too soon. And you sort of have to clear out or erase the blackboard so you can start anew. We may have both been full of crap, but it sounded good to us.
Sounds good to me.
I've had actors on who are in a play on Broadway maybe for a year, and they're sitting there talking about it, and then they will say, and I'm so lucky to be working with Maureen, and there's this one scene where she comes and says, "What are you doing?" And I say, "What is it?" I say, and they've said it by that point, by definition, hundreds of times perfectly, and it won't come to where you are at that point. It stays in the theater somehow.
Were you?
I've had that happen over and over. They try to quote themselves. And they can't.
That's interesting.
A field of psychology could open up here.
Well, did you go home at night, and when the show aired, did you watch yourself?
Many times, but not always. And I don't know really now what determined that. I usually did, or maybe 70% of the time. There's some I haven't seen yet, and they were good, and I always keep meaning to, because I had to do something the same night I taped it, and while it was on the air, I was out doing whatever it was. And it's funny for me to see them on, funny for me to see them on Decades, the Decades Network, if people haven't heard of it, because they're on 5 days a week there. And I'll be sitting there with someone like Lucille Ball or Laurence Olivier or whoever. Great, great guest, Peter Ustinov, a name not known to people nowadays, I guess. Or Robert Mitchum, who thrill you just to be sitting there in there, whatever that is, they radiate in person. It makes them a huge star. But I'll see myself with somebody from back then, and I kind of get into the conversation between us while watching it, and then I think, wait a minute, one of us is dead. They didn't seem so the moment before. I thought they had that intrusive thought. So it's strange to be whopped back in your life that far. It fools you into being the present.
Did you do a lot of
crazy talk?
No, this is good. This is interesting. Did you do a lot of homework for interviews, or did you just go from what you knew about the person and let a conversation happen?
As for homework, I don't think I... many times I didn't do enough. And most of the time, though, I came home from the show and read the guest notes for the next show the next day, trying to force the one I had just done out of my mind. Or having it go out all by itself, usually, like we were saying. But, when I started out, I was so over-prepared that I'd sit out there tongue-tied, unable to think what of the many things swirling around in my head to pick and talk about. And I got some good advice at the beginning. A friend of mine, about the third week, said, you know, you're sticking to your notes too much. Somebody will say something interesting, it wants a follow-up, and instead of following up, you say something else and go on to your next point. And that gave me, that worried me. I mean, because I could picture what it meant exactly. Let's pretend the guest said, and we dug up the old trunk and the hinges creaked on it as we opened it, and what on earth would be inside? Can you guess what was inside? And I'd hear myself say, do you have any hobbies? I mean, it wasn't that bad, but bad enough.
What?
Listening very well. Oh, my God, I got to get out of here soon.
You have to leave.
Does that affect you in any way?
It could.
Yeah, I guess.
How soon do you have to go?
Do you think we should get to the poem? Probably in about 6.5 minutes.
We should probably go to the poem then.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you've got other stuff like, oh, don't tell me my computer just ran out of power. It's sitting right in front of me. Better get it up. Oh, geez. Let's see.
This is okay. A real live interview today. I'll say that. We've had...
Well, people are almost getting to stay backstage and watch things go wrong. Let me see if I have it here.
You know, while you get it, it's an interesting week because yesterday, there must be something in the air. We had Heloise on, you know, the homemaker, Heloise. And something was not going right in that interview. And anybody who listens to it will know what I'm saying. And I just want let the audience know, I did learn from her assistant she wasn't feeling well, and I think she was on some medication to help her feel well, and it did not make for a great interview. But you soldier on.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
It's a remarkable thing. It's a gift from the gods, really.
That's right. And but it progressively...
Assuming there are gods.
It progressively got worse. By the end, it was really... It was something to hear, I'll say that.
I wish you'd send me a copy of it.
I'll send you a copy of that. You'll hear what I mean. That was interesting.
Sure I'll be able to identify. Yeah, I've had a lot of them. Oh, I just scrolled past the poem. Oh, no, here it comes.
Here we go.
I won't do it like Lionel Barrymore. I keep feeling awful about imitating. He's one of the great Barrymore family. He, John, his brother, and Ethel were thrilling actors on stage and on screen. Okay, if I can get the poem to start scrolling in the correct direction. Jeez, what is that? What does that? It's going the wrong way.
This is how talk shows should be. This is how they all should be, because if they were, they'd be a heck of a lot more entertaining.
Don't let's be one of those. To complete this, a light will fall near you from the... here we are, yeah.
Here we go.
I might just put my glasses on. I only need them... Actually, I bought glasses the day I couldn't read the dictionary well. Or find it.
Is this in recent times?
Here we go.
Here we go.
We know when it was. You want to give me a cue or countdown?
I'll do it. Audience, here, we're going to have some fun today, because even though it's October, we are going to have Dick Cavett, legendary talk show host, read the famed poem, maybe the most famous poem in the history of the world. 'Twas the night before...
I'm sure to get my name right.
kills that whole countdown. 'Twas the night before Christmas. Right here on October 18th. 'Twas the night before Christmas. Here we go.
Okay. By Clement Clark Moore. How many know that? 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there, and the children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap, when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter, and away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, and with a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came. And he whistled, and he shouted, and he called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen. Oh, Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all, end quote. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each tiny hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound, and was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples of Mary. His cheeks were like roses and his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye, a twist of his head, soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. And I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
And Lionel Barrymore now will not get work. You've done that so well.
I bet he's green with envy.
Oh, he's just, that's terrible. It's a sad day for Lionel Barrymore. Well, I know you have to go, but I'm sad because I always enjoy when you're on, and I maybe I'll have to come to your house to do this interview properly.
Yeah, I have a good time with you.
Well, it's always a good time with you. You're interesting and fascinating. And
think of something we didn't get to, and I'll do it real fast.
Oh, I want you to talk.
Or we can open with it next time.
Well, we'll leave this with the audience. Bill Cosby and Jack Benny did a show with Dick Cavett. I don't even know if they would show that one now. Do you think they would play that one?
Gee, that's interesting. I heard somebody, what was it? Somebody on a panel show. Oh, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld. It was Jerry Seinfeld. On Stephen Colbert's show, and they were speculating on what it would be like, and Seinfeld said, "I listened to his old albums and it's just fine," and Stephen seemed a little dubious about what the effect would be, thinking of all you have to put out of your mind when you think about Cosby. So I don't know.
It would be interesting.
I remember people when he first came along saying, "You've got to see this new guy in a club in Greenwich Village. He's a black guy with not the same styles of any previous black comedians that we knew then." And he said, for 1 hour, it was laugh after laugh until you were weak and crumbling from laughter. And he could do that. He could really do that.
He had Jack Benny laughing on your show.
Oh, that's right. Now I know what you're referring to. Yes. He rendered Jack Benny helpless.
He did. So
yes.
So next time we will open with Jack Benny and Bill Cosby, and would they air that program and what happened?
And which one will I play and which one will you play?
I'll do Benny because I can laugh, and you can do Cosby, and you might.
Yeah, I do Benny better than I do Cosby.
You do Benny. Well, and we also need to delve more into Lucille Ball because I think she was a much more complicated woman in your interviews than other ways we saw her on entertainment programs.
Oh, yeah. She was really a toughened old showgirl and a superb and tough businesswoman, too. So there's a lot more to her.
So I hope you come back.
My play just arrived. What do I do?
I hope you come back very soon so we can cover these topics. It's always a pleasure, Mr. Cavett, and I don't know how you forgot those feathers Lucille Ball was wearing that night. If nothing else, those feathers.
I now do clearly. I can see that they kind of fluttered about. I think I got one up my nose during the obligatory kiss.
I will talk.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, no, because I'm afraid I'll mess up the ending of your show.
No. I thank you for coming, and I hope you come back soon, and we'll cover those topics, and wherever you're going, I hope it's a good time.
You're okay, Scott.
Hey, thank you, Cabot. Bye-bye. Legendary Dick Cabot. He is a lot of fun. How much time do we got left here in this segment? Only about 5 minutes. Does anybody want to call 0-383-944? That's 740-383-9944. About 5 minutes, I guess, we have left here. What do you think of the legendary Dick Cavett? Now, you know, that interview was fun for me because odd things happened with the phone, obviously, and maybe the soundboard here. I don't know. Do I sound like I'm talking in a tunnel when somebody calls in? Somebody could call in right now and you could find out if I was talking in a tunnel, which Mr. Cavett thought I was. Interesting. We've got a whole nother hour coming up here, and we're going to do some giveaways next hour. But, you know, Dick Cavett is just one of the true American originals, in my opinion. What a fascinating guy he is. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Yeah, did you hunt that article about Harding and Trump?
You know, was it the one, Warren G. Trump? Was that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I did read that. I thought that was very interesting, comparing
Yeah,
Trump.
It was very interesting, and I didn't know whether you hunted it up or not.
Yeah, I finally got a hold of it.
Yeah, there was a lot of information there that people didn't know, and they claimed there's more coming.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Do you think President Trump is a lot like President Harding? What did you take away from it?
I think he is. That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
Well, they do have some similarities.
From what I know about Harding and all, and what I've read and all, Trump and Harding are pretty close together.
Well, that article certainly highlighted some points.
Yep, sure did.
Well, thanks, Bob, for the information.
All right.
Bye-bye. Hey. That's the type of calls we like here. 740-383-9944. Do you think President Trump is a lot like President Harding? There was an article in the newspaper. Warren G. Trump is what the article was titled. And it's kind of interesting because they did have similarities, certainly. I mean, they both had extracurricular activities. They both believe that we should not be dealing with other countries. But I don't know if Harding really believed. I can't speak for President Harding. I can't speak for President Trump. I can't speak for anybody. But President Harding did not like the League of Nations idea that Woodrow Wilson had put in place. And I don't think President Trump likes the United Nations. But maybe he does. I don't know. Maybe he does. It's interesting. And they both did kind of have this America First idea. But it didn't turn out well for President Harding because he always falls pretty low on the list of greatest presidents of all time. He's always toward the bottom. But I don't know where President Trump will end up. He could end up being the greatest president of all time. You never know. You never know. Not until the job's done can you judge what somebody has done. But I think I would have to agree with our listener there, Bob, that there are a lot of similarities between the two men. Now, we do have the trivia coming up next hour, and we've got all this candy to give away, and that is going to be a tremendous amount of fun. And as I say, if you were listening to the interview yesterday we had with Heloise, I did learn that she was under the weather and maybe taking some medication that did not react well with her. So that's what happened yesterday. Just wanted to let you know, and Heloise will be fine, and she'll be back the day before Thanksgiving, and we'll have a lot of fun with that because there's a lot of helpful hints that people need on the Thanksgiving holiday. I think that's a plethora of knowledge. What do you have for Thanksgiving? You know, we're very close. What is today? October the 18th. Thanksgiving comes on November 21st, or 22nd, excuse me. It comes very early this year. So we're only about 34 days from Thanksgiving. Can you believe that? 34 days from Thanksgiving? Just a little over a month, we'll all be sitting down for the big dinner and the... You got to have the sweet potatoes. See, here's what I think you have to have on Thanksgiving. You got to have the sweet potatoes. You got to have the turkey. I'm not a big ham person, so you got to have the turkey. You got to have the cranberry sauce out of the can. You've got to have the, what else do I like? Oh, biscuits. You got to have the biscuits and the butter, the real butter, not the fake butter.
You've got to have pumpkin pie and whipped cream. Got to have the pumpkin pie and whipped cream. And I don't know what it is that is so good, because most pies, well, I like blueberry pie heated up, but pumpkin pie heated up and a little bit of whipped cream, a dollop. Remember that, a dollop. What is a dollop? A dollop of whipped cream. I guess it's a spoonful. A dollop of whipped cream on the top, and the whipped cream starts to melt. It's very fascinating. Did you learn yesterday, by the way, during that interview with Heloise, about how do you know if creamer is still good? That when you go to stir the tea, or the coffee, I guess it would work for coffee, I imagine, too. If you put creamer in it, when you stir it, it swirls. If it doesn't swirl, the creamer is no longer good. See, that's fascinating. And I'll tell you another hint yesterday that was very interesting. Once you carve out the pumpkin, which I'm sure a lot of people are doing, if you want to preserve that pumpkin, you spray it with hairspray. We all learned that yesterday. That was fascinating from Heloise. I'd never heard of that before. So we certainly thank Dick Cavett for reading "Twas the Night Before Christmas" a little early this year, but really not when you think about it. We're only about 60 days away from the big Christmas holiday, which means the year only has about 70 days left. This is hard to believe. I remember when the new year came. I remember doing the New Year's show, the New Year's Eve show here on the station. And here we're 70 days from the end of the year. My, how time flies. That is certainly, you know, boy, oh boy, the older you get, the more it goes by. But we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back with trivia next hour. We thank Dick Cavett. He's always a great guest. Stay tuned. We're coming back in 10 minutes.
And Marge Hazlett, right here on WWGH.